There you go.
Thanks, Barb. I've got to kick these shoes off. They're terribly uncomfortable. Hi, my name's Carrie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Carrie.
And I cannot even begin to tell you guys how moved I am. I didn't expect this. You know, sometimes we cannot plan how stuff goes down. I almost had an expletive, but since I'm being recorded, I'll try and keep it clean. Before I get started, I just want to quickly, I have been jotting down a couple quick notes because I've come here tonight not really prepared in any like official sense of the word, but my higher power told me, Carrie, you've been coming to OA for like 9, 10 plus years. If you don't have something to say, you know, we're all in trouble, you know. So I'm going to have something for you guys tonight, whatever my higher power, I suppose, wants me to say. But I wanted to just quickly start with the Serenity Prayer, because when I was making my notes, I can't even remember if you guys actually did a prayer. You probably did. So we'll just go ahead and do that if we could. So, okay. If you guys would join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, so welcome. As I was preparing, this is how I prepared. At 6 o'clock tonight, I looked at the clock, and I had this thought. I've got a box in the basement somewhere, and I'm going to run down and grab a couple things, if I can find the things I want to bring. And I found them. So I come with a lot of fun stuff. I don't know about you guys, but whenever I've heard a speaker talk, it's always kind of fun when they have some things to share. So I'll be presenting a couple things and passing it around, pictures and so forth. But the reason I was so moved is because this box that's in my basement is my mementos box. And in that box has been the past 10 years of my life. And I found all of these things from retreats and pictures. And I even found, like, I have it in here somewhere, a letter I saved one time that I had proof that somebody had wronged me. It was a resentment. You know, and I thought, this is important stuff, you guys. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly in this box. And you guys probably have your own stuff, you know, your own box. We have our minds. We carry all those resentments and I don't know, you know, and the joy and the love. And then I was touched a second time when I came in because I looked around the room and I saw people I did not know. And I saw people that have inspired me. I've seen some people that I've helped along the way. I've seen some people that I've hurt and caused harm to. I've seen people that I've loved and that I continue to love. I see people who have seen the ugliest parts of me and some of the most beautiful parts of me. You guys, this is big. It's big for me, and it's big for each and every one of us. So, you know, we all have our journeys. You guys, along the way, there have been times when I have hated Overeaters Anonymous. I have hated Overeaters Anonymous. I hated the people. I hated the policies and institutions or the lack of following rules. I hated that nobody did this and everybody did that. You know, I mean, and then there's this box, you know. So, the other thing that happened about a week ago, you guys, is that I realized, like, I think I have spoke for, like, in the last year 3 times. Nobody planned it this way, I'm sure. So I got a little freaked out about that. It's like, oh my God, I bet there's, you know, whatever, but I bet there's people that are going, oh God, not her again, you know? But then I had this really cool realization. I am different today. I am a completely different person than whenever you guys saw me talk last. Even if it was a week ago. You know, I'm a different person from a week ago. And so are all you. So whatever we got here tonight is new and it's different. even if it might seem like the same old, you know? So, hi, Judy. Come up front. I hope you don't mind me. I just like to be spontaneous, so. For anybody that's listening to the recording, I heard a speaker do this. I thought it was awesome. So I'm going to do it. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32 people, approximately, in this room. And I thought it would be kind of fun if I just started out by taking all your inventory. I'm just kidding. That's a joke. But I did think of this because in this moment, I'm going to take your inventory. I'm going to take mine. I'm going to take all yours. We are all perfect in this moment. I believe that. Like, with all of our crap and all of our wonderfulness. It's just, we're just perfect wherever we are in this moment. You know, that's cool. And I don't think any one of you would be here tonight if you didn't want to change. I mean, if you didn't want some aspect of your life to be a little bit better, a little bit different, perhaps you want to learn and grow in some way. Even if you're like me and can dig your heels in deep, you know? We all want to be different. So if nothing changes, nothing changes. I hope you get something from my share tonight. I'm just really, really pumped up and psyched to be here. Okay, so let's see what I got. I really have bad notes. You guys should check this out. This is hilarious. It is an envelope with like a few scribbles. But you know what is so cool is that this is my life, right? I know it. Yeah, I know what happened. A lot of people know, too. So if I forget anything, feel free to call me out. I thought I would start with pictures. I'm going to pass them around. But this is basically, in this book, it's kind of all about the physical recovery a little bit. There's a picture of me in first grade. If I look terrified to you, it's because I was. I really was. I was scared of everything. There is a picture here. I kind of put little captions. But, you know, my higher power said, you should take those out. Let people tell their own story about you. Whatever. I don't have enough time. I'll leave them in. So it says, 13 years old, mom left, and I was ready to party. So I put that in there because I don't think I looked 13, but I was. And then I have a picture like I'm trying to be all punked out. If anybody, like, you know, was around in the 80s and tried to be cool, you probably can relate to this picture. I had some badass shirt of some band that I didn't even listen to because I was trying desperately to be cool. I liked cigarettes. A lot. It says 16 years old, drinking progressed. So I had been basically, my food addiction hadn't really manifested really even yet. Kind of started doing some dieting. When my mom left, I actually started to starve myself. I remember the day that I made a conscious decision that I was going to starve myself for attention. I thought that was a great plan. Really, you guys, seriously. I can remember. I think I was a very smart girl. I knew that my mom always wanted me to eat. You know, she wanted, eat more, eat more. So, I'm going to get her attention. I'm going to start starving myself. I don't know how old you are when you're 13. So I was probably 6th grade, 7th grade. But I also started taking a lot of diet pills. But you guys, it was all staged. Like, I wanted to be thin. I wanted to be thin because I have no life here, you guys. I was one of 7 children. My mom had left. My dad was raising me and my sister. And I just felt like this blank slate. Like, there's nothing here. There's nothing. So I have to be something. And so I was trying to be cool, and I was trying to be anorexic, and just desperately, basically, you know, the vision is hand up in the air, help me, I'm drowning. But I couldn't put those words on it, but that's what was really happening. So I can remember being in junior high, and I would go up to the water cooler. I don't think they're called water coolers. What do you call them? Thank you. Thank you, Marcy. Drinking fountain. And I would take my, I would do this. I'd put the diet pills in my hand, and I'd put them in my mouth, and I'd kind of be like, anybody noticing what I'm doing here? You guys, nobody did. I fell asleep in class. My plans really didn't go very well. Nobody noticed that I was anorexic, and nobody said anything to me about my pills, except for my brother Daryl one time said, what are you doing with those diet pills? I'm going to tell Dad that you're taking them. And I threatened him. If you do that, I don't know what my threat was, but, you know, I was a young, angry person. And so all that was there was trying to get attention, and I was a very angry person. I would put my fist through windows, strangled my sister. You know, this is teenage years. So it goes on. There's pictures of me. I also started smoking pot. And even though this is food, you know, all about food here, us compulsive overeaters, since I was empty inside, you know, of course, many of us have that part of our story too, where we're trying to fill up with drugs and alcohol. And then it goes through, and I'll just pass them around. But just kind of a little bit here, as I go through my life, I was trying with the food. I sometimes get ahead of myself. So I tried the anorexia bit, tried the dieting bit. That eventually just stopped working. And I started eating. And that was my solution. Like, I'm empty inside, and that is my solution. It brought me ease and comfort. It made me feel good. I liked it. And I like to talk sometimes about the progression of my disease, my physical disease, like this. Like, it started out that one Totino's pizza did the trick. I used to think that that was like, so awesome to be able to have my own Totino's pizza, because I used to have to share it with my sister. And then I can remember in my college years, I progressed to like a Red Baron. You know, it's a little bigger, it's a little heftier, and I would eat that all myself. And then it would progress to a whole large Godfather's pizza. And that would be my treat. That would be like, of course, there were many, many things that I ate. But I think this kind of gives a clear idea of how the it took more to satiate me. More, more, more. And eventually, it got so bad that before I came into Overeaters Anonymous, I ordered one of those like Godfather family meals, which includes, I know, a large pizza, I think a small pizza, and a dessert pizza. I was in for the night. You know? But what that meant was such a vast quantity of food. My fridge was empty. It was empty. I lived alone. My fridge was empty. I had a little pint-sized bottle of vodka in the bottom back and baking soda, because it's always important to have that in there, isn't it? And I'd eat this, okay? I would also hide the trash. I'd take one box out, like, every day. You know? I lived alone. Who's ordering? I had no friends. Who's ordering a family-sized meal? Me. But you guys, the point of this is that I would eat, I would puke, and I would eat more. I was also splattering a little bulimia. For good measure, got to make sure I can talk to the whole audience here. And I would eat, and I would puke, only to make room for more food. So my bulimia wasn't even to try and stay small. It was just to make room for more food. I tried chewing my food, spitting it out. I've tried everything. Now, I'm not going to spend all night telling you about all this, because we all have our little stories, right? We share a common problem. It manifests itself in different ways. Some people's disease here tonight is very beginning. Some people, you know, metaphorically speaking, are in the Red Baron stage. Some people have never gone to the Godfather's family meal stage. But it doesn't matter, right? I had a friend tell me that, this is a story real quick about alcoholism, that if somebody is an alcoholic, you know, and you are taking a snapshot of what that looks like, one person's going to be in the alley, one person's going to be in the corner of the bar fighting with somebody, somebody else is going to be making out in the corner, right? Somebody's going to be stripping on the table. We all have these different behaviors. It all looks different. They all might have drank different things. One disease. So with that, I'm going to just quickly pass this around. I gained my history from the time I was like 20 until I was probably a year or two before I came in here, is I really could, I had my fat periods and I had my thin periods. And I didn't think I had a problem with food because I could decide when I was going to be fat and when I was going to be thin. I felt like I had some control over it. But somebody also had told me recently, I hear so many good things. If you're trying to control it, you've already lost control. So that means I lost control years ago. But I would walk. You guys, I would walk. I would walk for miles and 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 miles every day. And I would eat very little food, and I'd be thin. And then winter would roll around. I'd be like, it's now time for my fat period. And I would be like, eat, eat, eat. I wasn't one of these people that dieted. You know what they say in some one of our readings? I've tried everything. I've tried horse pills. I've tried this. I've tried that. I hadn't really. I mean, I did a little bit of the diet pills, but really it was always me controlling it. So I thought I could control it. I came into Overeaters Anonymous and I found a food plan. You guys, I didn't know about the physical component of cravings. Some of you might not know either. Some people know all about it. So if you don't know about it, feel free to talk to me about it. I'll be more than happy to talk to you about anything. Hey, it could be a question and answer. Part of the question. But the big book in the doctor's opinion talks about that we have a physical component that sets forth a craving. Now he's talking about booze. But if you choose to, you can say, hey, dude, maybe there's some things that bother me, right? Maybe there's some things that set forth a physical craving, and once I pick up, I can't stop. Now, I'm not going to get into a lot of this, but when I came into Overeaters Anonymous, I did find someone who told me, this is true. It's true. Just do this. And I said, okay, I will do it. And I lost 150 pounds. I think I lost like 10 pounds a month. You guys, whoa! I start coming to Overeaters Anonymous. Well, first of all, I can't stop and without saying that the whole OA, you know, some people come to OA and love it from the beginning. I was not one of those people. I was a social misfit. That's not an underestimation when I say that. I lived in my apartment. I worked for a family business. My world was very tiny. Tiny. So when I came into OA and I started to make friends, somebody told me about a food plan, I lost 150 pounds right away. Like within my first 2 years of coming to OA. I'll never forget this woman told me. Some of you might be able to guess who it might be. We love her. And she was right. But she said to me, you do not have the recovery to support this weight loss. You guys, I wanted to kill her. She was right. In retrospect, she became my sponsor, and she told me I was too sexy for my abstinence. And she was right. You guys, I had lost that 150 pounds, and I kept coming to OA. I didn't leave. It wasn't like the party was over. But from that point on, I basically, in my mind, became kind of like, I know I'm not really supposed to be, but I kind of think I'm the VIP of Overeaters Anonymous. look good. I come to meetings. I do service. Ooh, I go to dances. You guys, I was the VIP of Overeaters Anonymous in my mind. And then this is the most important thing. Ella?
Allie.
She read it tonight. There is a proven workable method. There's a proven workable method. It wasn't find a food plan that eliminates your cravings and then don't do anything else but come to the party. That's what I did. So I gained 150 pounds back. I relapsed. I also maintained that weight loss for 2 years. I really thought that and I was doing stuff, you guys. I was coming to meetings. I was doing a lot of service. I mean, I think I did a good job of being the Overeaters Anonymous person. And I was maintaining my abstinence. And that proven workable method, that only became something that I really, really started to look at 6 months ago. I mean, really seriously looking at it. Seriously looking at it 6 months ago. And the proven workable method is, this is, in a nutshell, the 12 steps, okay? The big book is a textbook for some of us. And really, for me, it's not even really a textbook. It's kind of like I had this experience in the last 6 months, and I know I have a lot more to learn, and I really don't know a whole lot about what's in here, but I did have some wonderful transformation because I worked with a sponsor that showed me some things I just hadn't known before. I'll just say that. So it's so hard because, you guys, I'm here for just so limited time to be able to talk about everything. I want to tell you my story because that's what I was asked to do tonight. But also just to know that basically bottom line is that I didn't know that I was here just to be thin. Like, I didn't realize that I thought that abstinence was it, is my point. I thought that being abstinent was it. And because I was abstinent, I thought I was good. Now, some of you guys know this isn't true. I just didn't get it. I didn't get it delivered to me in a way that I could hear it. Maybe I wasn't ready to hear it. Whatever. But I just want to quickly read that it does say on page 19, we feel the elimination of our drinking, for me, eating is but a beginning. And that's really where I was 8 years ago. When I put down the craving stuff, the food, I was at the beginning. But I stopped. So I just made it my beginning, end, everything. And that is why one morning I woke up. I could not roll over in bed. There's a woman in the room tonight that was with me on this part of my journey when I started to gain the weight. Bless her heart, she loaned me a lot of her clothes. All of a sudden, I was needing to wear like size 15, 16. I had nothing to wear, and she loaned me all of these clothes, these beautiful, beautiful, beautiful clothes. And I told myself, now that I have this beautiful wardrobe, I'm not going to gain any more weight. I'm going to stay right here. Did that happen? No. I kept eating and eating and eating and eating and eating. But why did I start eating? Like, if it's just about stopping eating, then I would have been good. I had a really cool food plan. I mean, I loved it. I was eating fruits and vegetables galore. Really, grains. I was eating things I had never, ever, ever even had before. Who ever heard of quinoa? Not me. You know, I didn't have to eat quinoa, but I discovered it. And it was yummy, and I ate it. Millets for birds. No, I was eating millet. You know, it was really cool. It was cool. It was really, really cool. But what happened is that, and I'm not going to even go there, but I had something happen. It started out with a breeze. right? A breeze blew through. And I'll never forget the day when I went, whew, that's a breeze. All right, I'm okay. I'm going to call my sponsor. Oh, so talking about the air freight. You know, I mean, that's fine. It's a tool. I'm not trying to diminish that, truly. But I had nothing, you guys. I had nothing to root me and tether me in for the storm that was about to come down on me. And I started, I'll never forget the day I was standing in my backyard, and I said to God, you have forsaken me. I didn't say that, but that is what I felt, because I thought, I'm going to meetings, I'm doing service, I'm abstinent. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I have friends. Like, check, 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 check. I thought I was doing everything I was supposed to be doing. But I won't even begin to try and find it in here, but we are supposed to grow in spiritualness. We must grow spiritually. Because the big book talks about a psychic change. Really, that is our solution, kind of in a nutshell. I have to change completely who I am. I just transformed physically. That's all I did. Inside, I was still scared. Not quite as angry as I used to be. You know, I didn't lash out at people, but I had anger inside my heart. You know, don't cross my path. You'll end up on a list. You know, I was angry. I was self-righteous. I was very, very, very much in self-pity. And I also, well, God, you guys, the list goes on and on. I mean, I had no psychic change. I didn't. I mean, I was better, right? There's a lot of things, I can do yoga and get better too, you know? Like, there's a lot of things out there in the world. This isn't the only place you have to be. A lot of times this is the last stop for people because they don't want to be here, you know? I did try everything I thought I could. So, my point is that I was not rooted. And I was not rooted because I had not changed. So I was still floating around in this world, being me in a thin person's body. That was it. And so when this storm came up, and it was started a nice, breezy day, and it got really bad, really bad, really bad, really, really bad, you guys. I woke up every morning with fear and anxiety. I'm thin, don't eat that extra potato, and I'm thin, you know, don't eat that extra potato. I'm not, you know, I need to be dramatic about this because that's what was going on inside of me. Just don't have that extra green bean. Weigh and measure. Oh, I screwed up today. I screwed up today with my food. I got to go back and do something different. You know, that food plan that I was on was really cool because I learned something about cravings. I didn't know that I didn't have to be physically drawn to the food. I didn't know that, so it did teach me that. It taught me that not all foods are created equal. I didn't know that. But when I was falling apart, those measuring cups, the fruit, the vegetables, they were not strong enough to keep me held together. Period. So I gained 150 pounds, and one morning I woke up and I said, this is exactly, and I'm going to do it in the voice that was in my head. What happened to me? You guys, this is so sad, isn't it? It's a sad story. It's also full of hope. We're going to get there. You bet your bottom dollar. I don't know how much time we got. But I could not roll over. I could not wipe myself. I could not tie my shoes. I walk like this, like in my house. I had to like lean up against the wall. So even though, this ties in a little bit to when I spoke before, even though I'm an overweight woman today, I'm not blind, I know. I'm size 24. I don't weigh myself. These clothes fit me last year, they fit me this year. That's great. I'm happy about that. but I am not a thin woman. I'm probably clinically obese. But it's all relative, right? So when we see someone who is obese, we don't know if they couldn't roll over a year ago or 2 years ago, whatever. I'm bad with timelines. But I did this in the last time I spoke. I'm like, I can touch my sheep feet now. I can touch my feet now. I can touch my feet now. That's physical recovery, right? I'm also out of breath. I'm not going to try and pretend that I have seasonal allergies. I mean, there's some of that too, but you know, let's get real here. So this is what I said to God. I said, okay, God. And this is, I mean, I'm not going to go in all this. I mean, we're just talking about, if you want to know how horrible it was, you talk to my partner, Angel. Because bless her heart, she was going to leave me. And she loves me. And I thought she was like codependent, and I didn't think she'd ever leave me. And I knew the day that she said she was going to leave me, I must have been really bad. If she was going to leave me, I must be really bad. Because she was really codependent. You know what I mean? Like, what's she gonna, she's not one to stick around for this. I got money in the bank, sister. And she wants to leave. So, you know, I was really horrible to her. And I will daily make amends to her for that behavior. I was sick, terribly sick, spiritually sick, terribly, terribly, I was physically sick, I was spiritually sick, I was sick, sick, sick. So when the day came that I, as much as you can make a decision about these things, like, all right, I want to do recovery now. Again. So I'll start going to meetings. I just started doing what I did before. Because that's all I knew how to do. And I said, I'm going to start eating that food plan again. Because I'm done being this fat. You know, God, it's miserable. It's miserable. When you can't get out of the car, I mean, I couldn't get out of my Honda. I told my sponsor one time, I just want to lose 10 pounds. I just want to lose 10 pounds. And she said, what difference would that make? You guys, I wanted to kill her. I wanted to kill this woman many times. And I told her, I'm sorry. And I believe this to this day. 10 pounds makes a big difference, you guys. Every 10 pounds makes a big difference. It's such a burden to carry the weight. A physical burden. It's an emotional burden. It's a spiritual burden. I say that from personal experience. I say that to this day. It's a burden. But this is what God told me. He said, I'm just going to say it. I always feel stupid when I say what God says to me. But this is how I talk to God. God says, Carrie, you're not going to do that. Because you're just going to try. Before it was a spiritual thing, you blew that out of the water. Now it'll be just a diet. So you can't eat that way anymore. That doesn't kind of make sense, right? I mean, it kind of doesn't make sense. Like, who would say no to me eating healthy? But I guess my higher power knows better than I know. So I really, truly, I was like, okay. God said, this time you're going to find me. You're going to find me, and you're going to leave the physical stuff till later. And so that was, I don't know how long ago, maybe a year ago or something. I don't know. But I can tell you that not too long ago, I was on my way to Ace Hardware, and I've been working in the yard for so long, and I've been, I'm leaving out the part where I had a psychic change, but I had changed. This is big, but basically what I'm saying is that I'm my size, and I'm walking into Ace Hardware, and I'm thinking, God, you know, I feel so light in spirit, but I'm so physically burdened. I'm working in the yard, and it's kicking my butt. And I said, God, why can't, I mean, I'm eating really good. I walk my dog all the time. The weight isn't coming off. I don't know what the problem, I'm not trying to lose weight, though, but I'm just like, dude, I mean, I'm not binging. I have not binged for 3 years, maybe four. But I have not been on a diet or any, like, restricted food plan. I've just been really eating three meals a day, sometimes a snack. You know, I'm not crazy about my food. But I have changed on the inside. Over the last 6 months, I've changed inside of me. And I'm so sick of just like having a hard time, you know, moving my body. And it's annoying to this day. It's annoying. But my higher power said to me something, because I forgot that conversation. God said to me, Carrie, don't you remember? I told you the weight would have to come off last now. You have to be willing just to let that will be taken care of. Now we're working on inside job. So I stand before you today, a size 24. I stand before you, an obese woman. I think medically I'm considered obese. I don't know why. I'm like, am I obese? I think I am. It's so hard because we are kind of detached from our bodies. But inside my heart and my mind is different. And I cannot tell you guys this in an hour and a half, or however long I'm supposed to speak. I might be running over. I can't tell you this. I can't tell you. And I wrote something down. This actually comes from one of like the major religious books of the world, I guess. I don't normally read this, but I picked it up and I read it. It was the first day that I opened up this book, and it said, if I can find it. When the big book, when we talk about the psychic change, it says we have to be born again. I kind of repel that. I don't like that language because I have a personal history with that language. And so it was a little bit off-putting to me. But if I think of it in terms of that I was spiritually dead and I needed to be reborn, like have life breathed into me, that feels good to me. But on this particular subject, I couldn't believe it. There was a little paragraph about being born again in the spirit. I was like, this is big, because I was like, I have had that happen to me. So when I read it, I was like, I know what they're talking about. It says, the wind blows where it wishes, and you hear the sound of it, but you cannot tell where it comes from or where it goes. And that was so powerful to me, because to try and talk about recovery, it's like you cannot put words on the miracle of it. You can't. It is a miracle. And it doesn't just happen like, bing, I somehow got lucky one day. No. I had to become broken. We talk about surrender, right? God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. To me, that prayer is about stepping off of being in charge of everything, of running my life on my terms, and really not having it be like a little cliche, like, let go and let God, or God's will, not mine. Because I was just like using those things like as little pet me. I mean, they carried me from moment to moment. I'm not undermining them. They were important. But I wasn't living and breathing that truth. And when I started to live and breathe that truth, and the only reason I did is because I became so broken. I was leveled. Like, I'm not stupid, you guys. When I look in the mirror and I see myself and I think, I just got out of relapse and I'm doing things in recovery, but I don't feel different. It's because I wasn't different. This isn't rocket science, you know? And for a little period of time, I was really mad. I was really mad because I felt like, why didn't anybody ever tell me about this book more and everything that's in here? There are instructions in here. There are instructions in here. And nobody told me how to follow this. My life depended on it. Nobody. I was mad. I've chilled out a bit. Okay? Because I do believe that we're all perfect where we are. And it just took what it took. How do you make somebody become broken? I mean, I would kind of like be in a bad spot And as soon as I felt better, then I just kept doing what I was doing. You know? So, I think I just have a couple more things I want to talk about. Just a couple more. Are we okay on time? Like, I have no clue how long I've been talking. But I'm really glad to be here, you guys. Okay. A couple things I just found. I talked a little bit about the physical stuff, right? And this just touches upon a little bit of the emotional stuff, because there's a gal in this room that I was telling about who I was before. I was telling her, this is who I was. This is who I was when I first came into OA. She's like, no, I don't believe it. Like, it is true. So in those 9 years, the 9 years that I was doing whatever I was doing, I didn't have very good, strong roots. I had a bad, shallow root system, guys. But the love and the spirit of everybody that I came into touch with affected me. It fed my spirit, it fed my soul, and I grew. So I don't want to say that I did not change and grow during those times. I did. It's just like almost like I was getting prepared maybe really for the real change that needed to happen. So if anybody's feeling hopeless tonight or feeling like, oh God, I'm just not doing it right and I was feeling good, you know, all the stuff that happens. You're like, this doesn't work, or I hate my sponsor. You know, it's just kind of like, it's kind of like twofold. It's kind of like, be willing to be uncomfortable and keep coming. And even if you're feeling really shit, fire, and good, just wait. Because really, it's not going to last forever. If you're committed in your heart to changing and growing, I think that we get what we're supposed to get. That's just what I think. But that's what I have experienced. But when I came in, I was shy. I was very shy, very withdrawn. And there was no way that I would be able to speak up here. There's no way. I would have probably bullet points. I have to follow them. But I would be so unsure of what I was going to see. You know, I was just fear and anxiety and fear and anxiety and fear and anxiety and fear and anxiety. You know, paralyzed. I cared about what everybody thought of me. I was very emotionally immature and very weak, and I was terribly selfish. I didn't know it then. That came later. I learned that in the last 6 months. But I always wanted everything on my terms. And I would sometimes be very, it talks about this in the big book, how we're all, you know, and it's a play. And we'll either be nasty to get what we want, or we'll be sweet. Judy, that's very nice, you know. But it didn't matter. It was always about me trying to get what I wanted so I could feel safe, important, whole. So I just want to real quick read something here. This was a letter that I wrote my sister-in-law in 1997. I found this tonight. And I just wrote it. I want to read just one sentence, because it tells you where I was in 1997. In 1997, I was how old? I was born in 71. Somebody help me with the math. 26. Okay, I was 26 years old. I wrote, I wish I could just hide from the world and remain safe in your love and support and hide in the sanctuary of your family. She and my brother were moving. I went to their house every day. That was my life. I worked. I went to their house. I had no friends. I had nothing. I mean, I had nothing but them. I want to be one of your children. I was 26. I'm not mocking this, but that is what my heart was. I wrote, oh God, I can't believe I'm saying this. It's true, though. I wanted to be safe and well cared for, but now I must grow up. February 1997. In October of 1997, I had been living then in my own apartment, because I can remember sitting on my couch. This is the I'm eating a Godfather's family pizza period of time, right? This is what I wrote. Now, this was my higher power. You guys, the step work taught me that. I didn't know it. She was a higher power. And I had a new higher power, Oprah. This is dated October 1997. It's my letter to Oprah. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. I read it at home. It's very manipulative, guys. It was really fun to read it. But I put here, real quick, let me find it. Oh. In my life, many angels have touched my soul, and without them, where would I be? I need angelic intervention. I had difficulty bringing myself to write you. After seeing your show last week about weight loss, your experience at the Emmys, etc., I realized that I could not go on wasting any more days. For the past year, I've been hiding. I need your angelic help. I need a job, is basically what I was writing her for. It says here, I have been in the family business, and I think I was trying to get a job on the Oprah Winfrey Show. You guys, the reason I think this is so funny is I was so desperate for something that would make me better. I still worked at the family business. And so this is just a moment in time. You know, whatever. But I thought it was funny because when I read it, I thought I was going to try and get help from Oprah about my weight. But really, I just wanted employment. So, from the moment I walked into Overeaters Anonymous, I did not come here for my weight. I did not come here because I was a binge eater. I was a chronic binge eater. I am the person who drives through multiple restaurants and throws their trash out on the street so nobody finds evidence in my car. That's what I did every day for years. Sometimes I'd find a trash receptacle, but a lot of times I would just pitch it. I didn't care. I just had to get my fast escape. And so you don't come from there in all of these years and just say, I just learned something in the last 6 months. I'm not going to feed you guys that horseshit. I've learned a lot. But if you're struggling, if you have yet to find the recovery that you seek, I want to say more than just keep coming back. There's work to do, you know? We have to be willing to keep turning over the stones. Turn them over, keep looking, keep trudging. The last thing I'm going to say two more things, then I'm going to wrap it up, I promise. I kind of think that slogan of find somebody who has what you want, when they say to find a sponsor, there's a little tiny part of me that thinks that's kind of bad advice. And the only reason I think that is because I was sick, and so I was drawn to things that I wanted. Well, I didn't know. You want me to live on your life? Really? I mean, no. I just didn't have the best decision-making abilities. So when I look at but here's my point, though. I didn't. That's not how I pick my sponsors. Every one of my sponsors was somebody I hated. Sorry. All of you sponsors. Every single one of them, because I could feel like my higher power was telling me, have that person be your sponsor. And I go, no, I don't want that person to be my sponsor. Have that person be your sponsor. No, I don't want that person to be my sponsor. So that is one thing maybe just to think about, is if you find somebody you really, really hate, maybe you could really learn a lot of things from that person. I don't know. And then the last thing that I want to just say real quick is about the flame. I wrote the flame because this came to me when I had my psychic change. I feel really dumb saying that, okay? I mean, it kind of sounds stupid to put it out there, but that is what happened. Something happened to me. I gave up. And only people who really know me know that's true. I really gave up in a way I've never given up before. But I was having a hard time reconciling, like, But I had that one experience one time that was so cool. I felt close to God. I felt close to everybody. I felt good. I felt like I was on the right path. What happened? And so this is what I call the flame. And for me, I did things in program. Like sometimes I'd hear a speaker talk, and it would be like lighting a match. And you have the flame, right? You get inspired. You have, like, you feel your higher power. You feel it. You hear somebody say it in a meeting, something, or something just even outside of these rooms happens. You see a sunset. I had this awesome experience in Mexico one time that was really cool, that was like a spark. But then I just did nothing. I didn't do anything, and it went out. Gone. Until something else happened, and then I get a spark. And so the reason why I'm sharing this with you is the most important thing I felt like I needed to share today, in addition to this term brokenness. For me, it means surrender, but you know, sometimes we throw around words so much, it's like, what does that mean? What does surrender mean? And I like that word brokenness for some reason. But this, the flame, because what I didn't realize is when you get that flame, it has to be stoked. It has to be fed. It will turn into a fire, and we have to keep it going. We have to, which for me is that saying of don't rest on your laurels, because that goes out. It will out. And no matter how big the fire is, it will go out. Gone. And each person gets the dignity of finding how to keep that fire going. I have my way today, and it works for me, but there's not enough time for me to tell you about that. So with that, I will just say, if you felt those sparks, just envision that. You have to keep it going. Then I truly have something to give. One of the things I talk about my higher power a lot with when I'm in the shower and I'm rubbing all my rolls, you know. I'm like, who would want this, you know. I'm not saying it in a negative way about myself, but who would want what I have? Because you can't see what I have. Can't see it, and it makes it moves me to tears, because I know that I have a responsibility to become physically whole and healthy, but not so I can be too sexy for my jeans, but so that I have emotional, physical, and spiritual recovery, and really have something, and keep it going, keep it going, keep it going, keep it going, because I can't just be like, oh, look, I got it all now, because it'll be gone. In an instant. In an instant. It's really, it sounds scary and ominous, but really I found it such a joy to keep the fire burning. It is. It doesn't take much. So I think that's all I have. My mouth is so but I just have nothing but love and joy in my heart right now. My flame is burning. But it will be gone. Like, it doesn't take, you know, I mean, you know how you, like, when you try and, like, put out a campfire, it takes a lot, you know? So it just, my job is just to keep it burning, keep it burning, keep it burning. And I think that's all I have. Thanks. I'll send this stuff around just because I had it, and I don't know about you guys, but I always think it's fun. This was something I tried to make for, I was trying to chronologically put together my recovery when I first, you know, came in. I was going to do this wonderful scrapbook. How typical. 2 or 3 pages, I was done with that project. It's like, whatever. And if anybody wants to read my Oprah letter, it might make you want to throw up, but you can read it. And then this was my letter to my sister-in-law. If anybody wants to read it, you can. I'm full disclosure. And that's all I got.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thanks for having me.
Questions?
Do you need to turn me off?
Sharing? I guess it depends if we have questions.
Well, I don't think we have ever in Overeaters Anonymous done questions and answers before.
Questions and answers, and we're kind of...
Well, just
our meeting off the City of L.A.
Just so you know,
speaker,
you can ask me totally anything. Like, 100% ask me anything. No questions. I'm ready for Marcy because she's got one.
I'm a mother, so my question is, what is the relationship now between you and your mother that you don't have to answer?
That's a very good question.
Or is that too personal?
No. Yeah, the question is, what's my relationship with my mom? And my relationship with my mother is wonderful because I learned something that I didn't know before, which is that it is my job to love her. I used to think I really hated my mom forever and ever and ever and ever because it's a mother's job to love her daughter. That's it, period. That's right. Well, good luck holding on to that, Carrie Hine. That ain't going to buy you happiness. And it didn't. And so, I don't know why. Again, this is before the psychic change part. Something was growing in. It was that, remember when I read about the wind and the thing and we don't know where it comes or goes? That's what I was really trying to say, is that it's like God will get in there. If there's a crack, God will get in. Higher power will get in. Just a crack, just like water. Water will get in. If there's a place to seep in, God will get in, just like water. And so God was working on my heart with my higher power, with my mom. And one day, I was at my sister's party, birthday party for my niece, and my little niece got a little dolly. And the doll got passed around. All the presents were getting passed around. And I saw my mom hold this little baby dolly. And she was holding the dolly, and she was stroking its hair. And I could see, that she loved that little dolly and that she needed that doll in some way. I have no idea why I thought that, felt that, whatever. So on her birthday, I got her own little dolly, and I sprayed it with perfume to smell like me. Because my mom always is like, no, you have to understand my history with my mom. My mom would be like, Carrie, can you give me a hug? And be like, I mean, no. There were years, this is the honest to God truth, that I banned hugging between us. There was a no hug policy. I set it forth into motion, no hugging. So anyway, I basically got to a place in my life where I was willing to love her in the way she needed to be loved. Then all of a sudden she started to love me the way I needed to be loved. I don't know how that happened, but it did. Long answer to a very short question.
So what do you do now? You have this psychic change, and I understand exactly what you're talking about, but so what do you do for a proof plan? Do you just not have one? Do you just go through your day, and do you ever think about what you're going to eat? Do you prepare your meals, or do you just let God
guide you?
Guide you, or what is your...
That is a million-dollar question. Very good question, because... the question is, like, what do I do with my food now? I've had the psychic change, but then what about the food part? Blah, blah, blah. So here's what I've worked out with my higher power, that I'm experimenting, and when I say this, I'm saying it so seriously like a scientist. Like, I am trying to figure out, first of all, instead of just blindly following something somebody told me was true, I'm really trying to find out the truth for myself with food. And I can tell you that there have been days where I have felt wonderful, on top of the world, and I ate a particular something. Well, it's something that makes me feel sick. Well, most forms of pizza is one. And I just feel like, ugh, you know? I don't need to know today if I'm addicted to it or not. I don't need to get caught up in all the trappings. How free do you want to be? That's what I say to myself. How free do I want to be? And I have opted in my whole life. Opt in, opt in, opt in. My higher power said the other day, maybe if you're not sure, what about just opting out? I thought that was a good advice. You know? What about just opting out? I've had 20 people's lifetimes worth of whatever, bread. I'm not saying I'm anti-bread, but I'm just saying like, well, so I'm discovering it, Joyce. That's my answer. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. So I'm practicing, playing around, but I feel very safe. Like, I feel very safe and protected, and I don't feel like I'm one bite away from a binge. I feel very good and sound, but I'm also watching and listening and trying to be rigorously honest. That's it. Hey, David.
Hey, Karen. Thanks for what you said. I remember at the beginning of your story, you talked about cravings or something, so maybe we can come back to that as questions. That's what I want to do now.
Mm-hmm. On cravings?
Yeah.
Well, in Overeaters Anonymous, we all get the dignity of choice. They even have a pamphlet that says dignity of choice. And each person gets the dignity of trying to figure out how to eat and what to eat. But in the big book, it talks about the phenomenon of craving that supposedly, I just say supposedly because I'm not an alcoholic, but if a person takes a drink, that sets forth into motion. Like, forget everything else, you set forth into motion this physical component that draws you in. That basically, you're SOL. You've lost the power of choice. So you're just kind of sucked into the vortex of food land, you know? And so then, there's sometimes people will say, that's true for food. But I personally know people that just have, like, what I can eat on a plate, 3 meals a day, nothing in between, and they're fine. So it's this very hard subject to talk about, and I personally think that the subject of food, not to say people shouldn't talk about it, because I totally think that we need to talk more about food, probably. Be more free to talk about it. But it has to be done, I think, with the person that you've decided that you want to elect to be the person to guide you on such matters. Because it's very personal. The person who's starving themselves to death probably shouldn't be holding measuring cups. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just an example. But maybe they should. I'm not making any declarations one way or the other. But it's so very personal. Somebody like myself who was a binge eater, and I always ate everything I wanted all the time, to have that first food plan, to kind of learn, like, oh, I could be in a room with cake, you know, and not have to go to the cake. You know, like, I started to learn, like, I could be free from the physical component. But it also talks in the big book about that our much greater problem is that we have a mental obsession. And it's that mind that will tell me, oh, you can just have some, you know. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's kind of a very big thing because I know it's this thing because sometimes people try to have recovery, but they're drowning in the food. What is the food? I don't know. Whatever the food is for you. But it's hard to know you're drowning in the food if you've always been drowned in the food. If you've always been in the hot tub full of hot chocolate and everything. I mean, I'm saying hot chocolate, but it could be anything. If you're always, you know, so blinded with food, how do you know what's a problem and what's not? I think it's a very arduous process that you have to be diligent and rigorously honest and willing to be fat in a way and to be thin. Whatever. Anyway.
What's the biggest, like, challenge that you're currently facing and what are you
going to
try to overcome?
Oh, yeah, a little gift from my higher power over there. Yeah, somebody said, what's my greatest challenge? I have one identifiable challenge. Now, I know that as soon as this probably gets taken care of, there'll be other things. But in my life today, it really feels like there's one. But it is huge. Okay? I mentioned my partner, Angel. I love her. She's just this wonderful gift. I'm now segueing into my conversation about my gay fear, which I have all of this fear about this one topic. I'm going to give you an example of how it looks. I'm at work. I'm going to Albuquerque to represent Overeaters Anonymous come Monday. I'm going to be gone a week. I'm excited to go. My coworker behind me says, hey, Carrie, I'm going to be gone that same week, too. Young guy, nice guy. I've built a relationship with him in a very professional way. we tease each other. I'm not out to anybody at work. I tell myself that my personal life is separate from my professional life, as it should be. Fear. It's just fear. A lot of fear. So he says to me, What time are you guys leaving the airport? Or he doesn't say you guys, because he thinks I'm traveling alone. So he says, what time are you leaving the airport? And I'm like, I'm leaving Sunday like at 6. Oh, I'm leaving Sunday at like 7 in the morning with my family. You guys, I couldn't breathe. So this is my biggest challenge, is my partner lovingly calls it internalized homophobia. But it's the only area of my life I do not feel safe. So here's what happened. I got on the internet. And I'm like, being casual, I'm like, what time does your plane leave? Oh, we're flying on United. I'm looking. I'm trying to figure out what gate I'm getting. You guys, I'm so serious. This is so sad to me. I'm trying to get the layout of the airport so I can figure out or not if my dad is going to cross with him, because he's kind of an asshole, you know? He's going to go back to work and he's going to gossip about me, and I tell all these stories, and it's like fear, 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 fear. You weren't banking on this answer, were you? But this is what has me like... So I get all this research done. And then I thought, oh, okay, now what am I really going to do? And I am going to introduce him to my partner if I meet him at the airport. I will be terrified. It's the only choice I have. I would like to keep her in the house. I mean, I've introduced her to my neighbors. All you guys know her. I'm out in some forums. But I am... I've seen people walk this path, and whatever this path is, I'm not trying to say it's a path, but, you know, I've seen people who have had, like, grace, and they're like, no big deal, but from the time I was that little girl in kindergarten, that picture, my number one fear has been worried about what people think about me. I used to puke on my first day of school every day. Like, I am just not, so it's like putting the notion of I am not okay to the ultimate test is what it does. Because it's about sex, too. You know, it's not. But you people think it is. And I don't know. It just freaks me out. So God is going to have to mold and shape me. I can tell you this, that when my dad died, I was at my mom's house, my stepmom, and they had the obit all written. And they said, you know, my sister and her husband, and da-da-da-da, and da-da-da-da, and Carrie, and this person, and this person, and this person, and this person, and da-da-da, and the dogs, and Angel. And Angel was last. They were not trying to slight her. They were not. They didn't know where to put her. Like, I really believe that. I believe that they really were trying to be... They don't know about how I feel, like, the fear. They just see me walking around being, like, cool as a cucumber. But I think they just didn't know. And so when I read it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's fine, it's fine. But go ahead and put Angel up with me and just say Carrie and her partner, Angel Diwali. I was scared. I was. Uncles and aunts and things and people were going to be there that I had not even thought about. But it's like, absolutely will not lie. Absolutely will not hide, especially in this way. She took care of my dying dad. She's not going to be the last person on the list. So my higher power is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. Thanks. Are we done?
Do you guys want to open it for sharing?